Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is John Johnson in Glasgow. I'm joined by David Noble, as usual, in, I presume, Dalgetty Bay in Fife, on Edutalk. And tonight we've got a guest, Joe Badge. Joe's going to be talking a wee bit about her use of educational technology and Google Teacher Academy UK, I certainly hope, because it looked very interesting from all the tweets and bits and pieces. If you are interested in joining in, you can ask Joe a question via Twitter. If you just use the hashtag tag edutalk, EDUTALK, we should probably pick it up and pass it on to Joe. You can also email edutalker, and that's EDUTALKR, without the E, at hotmail.co.uk. Or maybe .com. David will maybe jump in and correct me in a minute.
Yeah, it's edutalk@hotmail.co.uk. And I should add, John, that we still haven't got the Skype-in number up and running, so there's no phone-in opportunity this evening, but we're hoping in the coming weeks to get that back as an opportunity for listeners to interact with the show.
Okay. So I hope Joe can just kick off and maybe tell us a wee bit about her background, which is quite different, I think, from a few of our other guests. She's well-travelled in education worlds across different ages and stages, I think. And take it from there. Okay, Jo?
Okay, thanks, David, and thanks, John. Yeah, I guess I've come a circuitous route to teaching, which was politely put. I started off in science and did a PhD in lab-based science. And then did various things working on conferences and all kinds of other pursuits, and eventually wound up working for JISC for a little while in the HE sector, and then that moved on to a much longer period at University of Leicester, which is where people, particularly on Twitter, might know me from, where I was an e-learning technologist and did quite a bit of work around plagiarism detection and the use of Blackboard as a VLE with undergraduate students. But I jumped ship just over a year ago and switched from being teacher to student and started my PGCE as an upper primary trainee at Leicester University in September. So I'm now almost there with my PGCE training, and I've just secured a job for August, which is fantastic. So I'll have my own class come August.
Oh, congratulations, Jo.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's a big relief. I always get to this point in the year, going to get a job. So I'm delighted to have a post to go to, so that's been good. So I guess I've come to teaching in a roundabout route, but with an awful lot of e-learning and social networking and stuff behind me, so I think that's it's really helps me throughout the course, and my Twitter network has been fantastic. I've picked up a lot of new people that I follow and talk with who are teachers, but equally I've still got the HE connections, which adds a real depth to the conversations that I can have with people on there. It's been really helpful. So that's a little bit about me and where I've come from. Do you want to know a bit about the Google teaching?
Well, just maybe a wee bit more about one of the things, a couple of interesting things there is, one, you're moving from, you know, higher ed down to, I'm saying I'm a primary teacher and I'm still saying down to, maybe over to primary. I'd be interested in the reasons for that. And the other thing I'm really interested in, because I meet a lot of folk who are just coming out of college in primary teaching, is you've obviously got this background in e-learning and social media, and I'm quite surprised when I meet younger teachers or newly qualified teachers who are not necessarily au fait with social media and things.
Yeah, okay, that's
about
two
six
really
questions
good points
at once. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I was just scribbling quickly down, so I don't even forget what you're doing. So thinking about the reasons for moving from higher education to primary education, we'll say across. Lots of reasons, really. I think I'd done 7 years at University of Leicester and really enjoyed my time, but throughout that, I'd kept moving closer and closer towards the teaching side of what I was doing, and was doing quite a lot of pedagogic research into how things were being used, what tools we were using, and what impact they had on learners. And the thing that always stood out to me was that I was always really attracted to how people learn, why they learn, what was useful for them, what tools did work, what didn't, and why, and how it fit into the context of what they were learning. And although it was at undergraduate level, the more I got into that, the more you just sort of follow it logically back, and you start thinking much more about learning as a subject in itself. And the natural place for me to really think a lot more about that was actually in the classroom and work directly with children. Certainly a big influence has been that I've had two children myself in that time. I've got twin girls, and they were getting to a point where they're now old enough to be a little bit more independent. Having twins has been a fascinating experience in that they're non-identical, and that's made me think an awful lot about how children learn. And it amazes me that I can see my two girls have learnt very different strategies for all sorts of different things at school and at home, and yet I feel that I've treated them fairly equally, and sort of coming from the same background and the same home, going through the same experience at the same time, they both learnt to read in very different ways, they both learnt different math techniques and things like that in very different ways, and have quite a different outlook on thinking about things. Combined sort of those interests and those thoughts about education with the fact that teaching's in the family, and I do think there's a bit of that, you never really quite get away from it. My mum was a reception teacher, and I spent my formative years in various classrooms washing and disinfecting Lego over the summer holidays, and there's something about that. So I hear you laughing. It's something about that. It's not the love for disinfectant, but there's something about having a teacher as a parent, I think, probably does end up, it gets into your blood somewhere along the line, and that sort of idea of looking for something a little bit more to do. In that I was working part-time before, then it seemed a really good time to change the career and make that move for education in the round, as it were. I did look at going into secondary, but I've had this conversation with a lot of people on the primary course, and a lot of us had similar thoughts, and that was going into secondary education. I went and worked in a couple of schools, and it really didn't do anything for me, and I don't know what it was, and I can't quite put my finger on it. It's probably something to do with that interest of mine of wanting to see that moment of learning and those steps forward, and the children at primary level are much more open and demonstrative about that, I think, and that was what really interested me. Also with the ICT, I think I probably would have specialised in science if I'd gone into secondary, and I felt that the ability for me to be able to apply those sort of that ICT background that I had would have been more limited on a science curriculum or even an ICT curriculum than using ICT as a tool, which is really what I think it's there for, and how we should be working with children with it. Actually, you know, just listening into those and being able to do that with primary school, I thought was more of an advantage for me and something that stood out to me.
Sure.
Thinking about social media, I agree. I mean, you know, I turned 40 this year, and I'm certainly not a digital native by any shadow of a stretch of the imagination, but it's something that I've really grasped and embraced and really love, and is a very big part of my life and the way that I learn and the way that I communicate with all sorts of people, and I've had the same thoughts that you, that there are an awful lot of students on our course that I've, you know, my colleagues who, you know, range right from, I think our oldest student is 55,
down to some newly, you know, some students straight out of university at 21 and 22. And it's certainly the younger ones are not digital natives either. They're not automatically on social networks. I mean, obviously, I've had a heavy presence on Twitter for quite a long time. And I did meet another fellow student on Twitter before the course started, which was brilliant. And so we've both used Twitter a lot together. But it really is a core of the two of us kind of using Twitter. I've bashed on about it as much as I possibly can. And I think we are beginning to pick a few people up. And the time, I find it interesting, the time that it comes around is when we're out on placement and we're not seeing each other daily, and it's the perfect medium for being able to talk to each other and share some thoughts while you're on a bit of support while you're on placement and working all the hours. So we've picked up a few more people since then, but I think there's generally quite awareness about it. And I think there's also a thought that we're doing so much on the course already. This is an extra thing to get your head around. And social networking is one less thing that they can do without. Interestingly, we have a very active Facebook group, so it's not all non-social networking. There is social networking going on within the course. And I think for a lot of the students, that Facebook there provides them with the support that they need, but it's only students within the course. And my point has always been to the students to say, well, that's fine, we can answer each other's questions sometimes, but I know that an awful lot of support and help that I get comes from real teachers in the real world who are actually teaching children as we speak, and so I know full well that they'll have input and advice and help that they can give on things that we're doing on the course, rather than just sticking within our own community. I've tried very hard to get them to look outside, and I hope that some will, and I will keep pushing it. But it is difficult, and I think it needs a lot of modelling and a lot of support from people within the course, perhaps, and perhaps taking a lead from some of our staff members. We don't have many staff members on Twitter, although we do have a couple. To try and demonstrate the value of it, really, and the usefulness of it.
And how about the sort of attitude among your fellow students to using just your ICT in general in the classroom? Do you find that's age-related at all?
No, it's not. It's not age-related. We've got younger students that really don't like using ICT, and older ones that would use as ICT as they can, you know, they can squeeze into their teaching day. So it's not particularly age related. It is, to some extent, I think, confidence related. I think a lot of people feel that ICT in the classroom is, again, just that extra thing to go wrong. And when you're new and you're just starting teaching, there's so many things to keep a handle on at the beginning, trying to pull the laptops out, only 50% of which will work, and only 4 out of 5 will connect to the network, and all those things, you need to be quite confident as a teacher to be able to start coping with that and coping with the children. And so I think it's something that tends to get pushed to one side unless you get a lot of support in the school that you're working in, which is a real shame, because we've had some really excellent successes with students using all sorts of things. I mean, I just did an ICT specialism in my last placement, and the students that were working together on that did some great stuff. One of them was using the Night Zookeeper project. If you've heard of that, and again, kind of struggled with it and got it working really well in the last week, but he did sort of have offline backups, and he created a zoo in the classroom as a support that they could use in case they couldn't get online.
With the plan B, don't we?
Yeah, it's having that plan B and having that backup, and I think that's something that's really quite hard to do when you're beginning without a lot of support.
Joe, it's David Noble here. I've been interested recently in looking at people's kind of histories of using ICT and the extent to which that kind of makes them keen or competent to use ICT. As it maybe changes nature, as it becomes more social, as it becomes a greater expectation, I suppose, greater pressure to use it within lessons and with your classes. And maybe this leads on, I suppose I've got two kind of questions here that might turn us towards looking at the Google Teaching Academy. But you mentioned that you'd worked for JISC before and you've got a kind of long history of working within e-learning and higher education. Do you feel that that was where you're at just now in your career, that that was these were necessary experiences to go through to get to the stage where you appear to be both competent and confident to use ICT in the classroom? And kind of tagged on to that, I mean, I didn't really follow much. I was kind of offline when the Google Teacher Academy was on, but to what extent do you think the people who attended that event, or whatever you want to call it, also had long histories in ICT? And is that a barrier to other new teachers who are maybe looking in and maybe want to try things out but don't have that long tail, I suppose, of experiences and expertise?
Oh, yeah, that's a really good point, David. I mean, yeah, I've had a long history with ICT, and it goes back even further. It goes back to my parents. I mean, it's sort of part of my upbringing, in that my dad tried quite hard to start a career as a programmer, but he was going to university in the early 70s, and obviously there weren't many computers around for doing programming, so he was sent to do I think something like technical drawing or something instead, and ended up on a textiles course. So I went completely off the plan there, but was made redundant, and then finally did retrain as a computer programmer. And we'd had home computers right from a Spectrum, and then we had a BBC B at home when I was a teenager. So that's always been part of my background. I've always been interested in computers and sort of sort them out and used whatever was new and fun to play with. So yeah, I've got a long history with it, and I think it's an interesting point, and I do think it's an advantage. I don't know if it was necessary. It's difficult, isn't it, to know if something that you've naturally been interested in leads you towards using it more. Because I will sit and fiddle and play, and I think it's that play element for me, and the willingness to find new things and just have a fiddle with them and see what works, which is quite a childlike, I guess. A lot of people say that children don't need teaching on ICT, and I would disagree with that. I think they do need showing things, but they are willing to sit down and just fiddle around, which is really what I do on a daily basis. Whether that history is something that's, and that ability to fiddle and be open and play is something that's completely necessary for being comfortable in the classroom with it, it's difficult to know. But certainly thinking about my other PGC students, the ones that are willing to have a go probably have got longer histories. It'd be interesting research to look at, Dave. I'd be interested in seeing that. They probably have got longer histories of playing with ICT in lots of different contexts in their own lives. As far as the Google Teacher Academy goes, I don't know. I didn't get to know people well enough to know how far back they went in terms of ICT use. But my gut feeling would be that there's people similar to myself that have had a long interest, and, you know, really had a good play with an awful lot of stuff over an awful long time. And that does, of course, have a lot of implications for training new teachers, and also for trying to pull on board people who are already interested but not quite confident enough yet to be using some of the tools in the classroom. It's how do we get back to those sort of hooks where we allow people time to have a play with things and feel confident with it themselves before they move on to using it with children. I can see that's going to be really important. And maybe it is as simple as giving people time and space to play. One of the things we were talking about at Google was using the Google Apps, which I can talk about a little bit more. But one of the things that we were saying was you need a hook to get people in and something that's useful, a sort of a Trojan horse. That's something useful for people to use and offers them a massive benefit that they see is really helpful and then pulls them into the other services that are available. It was Mark Allen who suggested that one of the things that he's used to pull staff into the Google Apps is the calendar. So using a Google Calendar for school that can be shared with people, it can be shared with parents, and because of the prevalence of smartphones these days, can be really easily added as an extra calendar to a smartphone and then updated and shared and changed by lots of people on a group calendar basis. So you can imagine that for a school calendar, that can be really helpful in that you can add appointments in and you can add and change details, but equally it's there and is overlaid next to your home calendar or your work calendar or whatever else if you're a parent or a teacher. And he'd said that was something that he'd used, one of the Google products that he'd used that really helped people to get interested in using other Google products. So maybe that's one way to do it. So, you know, space and time to play, linking to technology that people already have and are not afraid of and are quite happy to use, such as phones, smartphones, and also something that's actually useful and serves a really good purpose can be a Trojan horse and a way in to try and get people onto different things, I guess, and new things.
I certainly like the idea of play as a way in. I mean, personally, I'd never used a computer until I started teaching, but at that point when I did use one, I didn't feel any pressure to be good or useful. I just started enjoying it and messing about, and I definitely think maybe if folk don't have the expectation of a result, if they just have an expectation of having some fun and the children having some fun to start with, at least it maybe gives people a foot in the door. How did you get involved with the Google Academy, Jo?
When I was thinking about going into teaching, I started following quite a few teachers on Twitter and see what their daily life was and what they were moaning about and those kind of good things, and just to get some sense of the profession and what was going on. And one of the people that I followed that, of course, everyone has to follow as soon as you start teaching is Tom Barrett. So I've been following Tom for quite a while and saw that he was successful in organising the Google Teacher Academy to come to the UK in 2010, September 2010. And at the time, I was looking at it longingly and followed the tweets and just thought that it would be an amazing thing to join. But as I hadn't even gone on a PGC course at that point, it seemed a little forward thinking, really, and a bit too far out of my scope at the time. Then having followed the people that went to that initial UK Google Teacher event, I went through and followed them all on Twitter and got to know them a little bit more online. When the next one was advertised to come out in April, I saw the call fairly early on. And the process that happens is that you submit, you fill a form in, which is a Google form, obviously, and asks you for some information about yourself and what you're teaching. They want to know how many students you might reach and children you might reach, and how many other teachers you might be able to influence in doing further training about Google. And then they ask you to submit a 1-minute video And they gave us two titles. There was Classroom Innovation and Motivation to Learn, I think, or Motivation was the other one. So it was completely open. You just needed to make a 1-minute video and publish it on YouTube and submit that along with your application. And the Google Certified Teacher program has been going for a few years now. I think we were the 13th academy. And each time they've got 50 teachers together from across the globe, but predominantly from the US. I could say the one that Tom Barrett managed to get organised in 2010 was the first one in the UK. But that did include people from the US, and it did include people from other places around the world. And the one that I went to in April I think we were only 24 of us were from the UK, and the other 26 were from around the world. And people came from as far away as Japan and Mexico and Buenos Aires and all over the world to come to London to the Google headquarters for this one day, extremely intensive, packed day of training and workshops and sharing, all based around Google products. Other Google systems, and then at the end of the day you'll get a badge and a certificate, and you're stamped and certified as a Google certified teacher. Part of the deal is it's a free day, but you have to get there, and obviously you have to try and get in, and there was quite a stiff competition to get in this year and get selected. A part of the deal is that they ask you to make an action plan where you talk about how you're going to use the knowledge that you've gained and the connections that you've made from the other Google teachers, and take those forward over the next sort of 6 months, to say how you're going to spread the word about Google. So I guess I can put this one down on my action plan as the first step. Talking to people online, which is great. But yes, the idea is to it's a great benefit for Google to have a system of people that know plenty about their tools and are happy to talk about them and use them in classrooms and promote them widely. So that's certainly their benefit. It's a great marketing tool for them. But it was a genuinely inspiring and really thought-provoking day. And the group of educators that were there were fantastic, absolutely amazing. I think there was just two of us that were students. There was myself and a secondary student. But everyone else had just masses and masses of experience in all sorts of classroom teaching, primary and secondary, and then also some other people who were administrators or sort of higher level admin for ICT in different contexts. So a really interesting crowd.
Okay, I'll maybe just say at this point, Joe and John, that we're listening to, if you're listening to the live stream or the recorded version of tonight's conversation at edutalk.cc, that at any point you can leave a comment or a question for myself or John or for any of our guests on the show. As I say tonight, we're delighted to have Joe Badge. And to get in touch, you can email edutalker, that's edutalkr, at hotmail.co.uk, or if you're on Twitter, you can put something up there and just include the hashtag edutalk, and John and myself, or of course Joe, who's very prominent on Twitter in education spheres, will also be able to pick up anything that you're putting online. John, have you got any questions about the Google Teacher Academy?
Well, Joe? There's one thing, Joe, that, I mean, this is maybe a bit cheeky question, but recently the Scottish Government are looking for moving their online community or portal on a wee bit, and one of the options was to go with Google. And back in October there was a large meeting of various folk interested in ICT with the government and people from like Microsoft and Google and things like that. And after the event we had a teach meet, a very brief sort of one of the smaller sort of 20-30 people in a cafe rather than projectors and mics style teach meet. And I was quite surprised. The guy from Google came along as well, and I was quite surprised with the amount of sort of negative feeling. I mean, he was pushing Google fairly hard, but I was quite surprised at the amount of negative feeling on the, in the room about, you know, what is Google selling? Google selling us as a product. And I wondered if there was anything going on at Google Teachers Academy UK discussion about that, about, you know, how Google, what Google gets out of this, etc.
Yeah, well, unsurprisingly, no. In, it was in the Google headquarters, in context, we were in the Google headquarters in London. Predominantly American Google employees, a couple of the Irish office and things were there. So, you know, unsurprisingly, Google was presented in a very positive light, and we were there to be part of that indoctrination, if you like. I mean, it's one way to put it, I guess. I've had the same conversations as I'm sure that you've had with lots of people, and I'm sure that I will now start to have them again. Where it's partly that Google are quite evangelical about what they do, and while that's great and feels very positive in a lot of contexts, I think there's particularly a natural British tendency to be massively suspicious of evangelicalism in any ways. And the other, you know, massive plus for Google is that it's free, and that the Google Apps system and domain that you can set up for a school is completely free. And if you've already got a domain and that's hosted, then there's nothing to pay. If you haven't, then you can set up a domain and register with Google. And then it's $10 a year, so you get Gmail and Docs and a calendar and lots of the things that you can bolt on to the Google Apps site, all sat within your school with advertising turned off for nothing, and it is really hard to accept, particularly as a cynical Brit, and perhaps even worse if you're Scottish, I don't know, that you get something for nothing. Ultimate assumption is that there's something in it for them, and what are they getting out of it, and what are they selling? And it's quite difficult to get over that. And I don't really have a great answer for that. I mean, the main answers are that I know you know, legally, they are pretty tight. Their safe harbour agreement that they have about data and how things are handled and what's held and what's used and what's not used is I think fairly strong. It's something that I'm going to need to look at, because I would very much like to set up an apps domain for the school that I'm going to. But it is a really hard argument to have with someone when something is free. Yeah. People just can't get their head around it. I mean, ultimately, it's about their brand. It's about their brand being in schools at a very early stage. Although the apps, domains and various systems that I've seen, I think have been very low key on the branding. You are able to take an awful lot of the branding off. Certainly, the conversations that we had when at the Google Teacher Academy with people that had set up apps, and their advice was just to talk about a learning system, perhaps precisely because of the reaction that you've experienced, but also because it is important, but it's almost not that important. If you're buying into any other VLE or any other system, you wouldn't necessarily tend to talk about the company that you're buying it with, because you'd assume that the parents or anyone at home or people that were interested in it would know who Frontier were or who Blackboard were or what other systems that you're using. And perhaps there's a difference with the fact that everybody does know who Google are and have their own ideas and perceptions about what they do. So I think it's really hard. Did you find, I'm quite interested to ask you a question about, did you find that evangelicalism, almost, I can imagine from the Google person at the meeting, really swung things
badly against them, and so that people were quite anti the system in the end.
I would have said, yeah, he didn't do himself any great favours with a Scottish audience, certainly. And I know similar sort of things that I'm on the ADE list, which has a lot of Americans, Apple fans in it, and I mean, I'm a Mac fanboy myself, I suppose, but there's a different sort of mode of discourse among American educators and UK ones, I think, especially in the enthusiasm with which they express sort of positivity about things, and it can get a bit, I think, hard to take if you're from a UK background where, you know, that's quite good is probably as good as you'll get. So, I mean, I think there's a bit of that going on.
Yeah, no, definitely. The table, we were at the Google Academy, it just sort of sums it up really. We were sat on tables, we were in teams, and we had a lead learner, a person who was leading the team. And our table of six people happened to be predominantly British. There was actually one American on the table, and the rest of us were British. We did have another international person, but he was British originally. He was David Helen from Prague. So when we started with the whooping, I think it was 8:35 in the morning, where they stood up, you know, the first guy stood up and said, "Well, how excited are you all to be here?" And then went, "Woo!" And we all went, "Oh, my God!" Oh, no! And it continued like that the rest of the day. And if anybody followed the tweets, you'll see that every now and again there was a tweeted whoop was about as excited as we could get. We went for the gentleman's applause in the end, with the Brits in the room. But fortunately, there was a good dose of Texans and Californians and various other people who were quite happy to whoop and holler and cheer.
Yeah.
And it actually, towards the end of the day, it wins you over. I mean, I lived in the States for a while, and the stuff we were seeing was amazing, and we were really learning lots of good stuff. So, you know, you do help but join in with it. And that's one side of it. But this side of the sort of pushing of things and getting something for nothing is quite hard to deal with and quite hard to explain. And quite hard to say that freemium model that really they just want to grow their market share. And so any way that they can do that, including through education, is a bonus for them, is quite hard to counter with other teachers and parents, particularly in the UK. I think we've got a particular issue with it, because people just can't get their head around that you get something that is really a very high quality product for nothing. And it is difficult to try and articulate that to people. When I was back in the HE world, I went to a Google Apps users group meeting in Loughborough about this time last year, and Loughborough University and the Open University, of course, have both gone over to use Google Apps for all their student dealings and student emails, and they said that the hardest part of switching over to the Google Apps was getting their procurement departments to accept a contract for which there was no money changing hands.
Yeah.
And we're not set up to deal with that. This is a new thing in a new world, a new way of working, and our minds are not quite up to coping with that yet, and certainly people's finance departments aren't. But when it comes to thinking about using things in school, the money that we will pay for VLE will go a long way in the classroom. And when money is tight, you know, I think it's worth making a very strong argument to start thinking about looking at free tools. They come with a cost, they come with a time cost, and they come with an expertise cost. But, you know, there is cash to be had that can be diverted to use for other things there, I guess.
Yeah.
John, I've just got a quick question. Oh, this is quite rare for me, but I'll try and keep this concise.
Joe, we're kind of looking at another movement in Scotland which I know is replicated across most of the other, you know, Western education systems, and I noticed there was a really interesting article in The Guardian online earlier on this week, and it's around showing more impact for CPD. And I think there's moves in Scotland where CPD is going to be kind of tightly related to a system of free registration for teachers and improved systems of line managers conducting professional review and development meetings and systems of kind of performance management. But what you're kind of talking about here, your experience with Google Teacher Academy, you kind of talked about freemium, and it's kind of like free learning in the sense that, you know, unless I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, you've done this off your own back, and yet I think the way things are going, there's going to be this increased expectation that you can show how this will or has impacted not just on the school and systems within the school, but actually on following it right through outcomes for learners. So I suppose firstly, do you consider this a CPD? Do you allow it to move within the domain of your professionalism within your workplace and your actual professional actions within your workplace? If you do, how maybe in the future are you going to show impact, or how is there actually going to be tangible impact on improving the learning or improving the outcomes of the young people that you're about to start working with after the summer?
Right, that's a really good question, David. I didn't see that the article that you're talking about, but I know what you're talking about, the fact that teach meets and other things like that are done in people's own time and done for free, but are really powerful in terms of changing people's attitudes and showing new things and showing good practice. It's difficult to put that in a context with people who don't know about those types of experiences and haven't used it and would never think of doing that kind of development activity in their own time for nothing and not get anything for it, any payback for it. And it's a difficult model to see if that would... It's built on enthusiasm and it's built on... a way of approaching your own learning and a way of approaching your own professional development. And so, you know, coming onto that, you know, whether or not I think that the Google Teacher that I've, Academy I've just been to is CPD, yes, I think it was. I've downloaded my certificate that was a Google Doc, and I've put it in my PDP for my QTS standards. And I certainly hope that it will be recognised by the teachers that will be examining me as a genuine, you know, learning experience for me and a place where I, you know, have developed a great network of contacts and so on. How do I monitor that and show impact from that? I mean, Google have already given me a head start in that they've, you know, they've asked for this action plan with some steps that I'm going to take. They were quite clear in terms of saying to us, and one of the data that they collected on your application was the number of children that you would be working with, and ultimately the number of other adults that you would work with, that you would talk to about Google products. And they had clearly taken all of those numbers at face value on whatever you put on your form, which of course was completely true, but you know, and multiplied them up and come up with some, you know, massively stunning huge number of children and teachers that we could, between the 50 of us, have an impact upon. The difficulty comes in what you measure that impact in. It's very hard to say that I personally have had an impact on someone else, because obviously it's something about influence and someone else's motivation to start using something that I've shown them is really difficult. A lot of the Google teachers will be in their action plan, I know, will be talking about things like actually getting Google Apps ED as an EDU, as an education package, up and running in their school or rolling it out with other schools. And so that's actually something that's straightforward in that you can say, well, I set this up and we used it. Measuring the impact of that, measuring how well it's used and what effect it has on the children is really hard. But equally, I think you could make the same argument for professionally run CPD that's put on in schools and in inset days and so on. And I don't know, having not yet quite been through that system in schools, I don't know how the impact of that is measured, other than it's done in school time with a kind of a some kind of professional authenticity behind it, I guess. That doesn't really quite answer the question, but I think it's hard.
No, thanks for having a go, Joe. That was, it's really interesting. I'm aware that we're kind of coming to the end of the show. Are you okay for another 5 minutes, Joe?
Yeah, fine, yeah.
Right, that's fantastic. John, I've got a couple of questions to finish up, but I'll let you come in at this point.
I'm once you get on to professionalism, Joe, I kind of lose my track a wee bit, because I've always quite liked the amateur approach to CPD myself, and regard most of the things that I've done off my own bat has quite often been, well, more valuable to me perhaps rather than the school, but certainly when I was teaching, more valuable to the children I was working with very often, because you get a great deal of enthusiasm, I think, if you do things off your own bat. It's quite interesting to hear you as well talking about schools rolling out Google Apps themselves, because I think in Scotland certainly that sort of decision is usually taken at a local authority area level. Most of the local authorities in Scotland will provide email either by themselves or through GLO, which is a national project, to the schools rather than the schools making their own decisions about this. So we've probably got a slightly more unified approach. And the other thing is that in Scotland, certainly I believe in England, that VLEs are mandatory, am I right? And very few primaries certainly in Scotland would use a VLE.
Just say that again about the VLEs.
Well, I think if you coin a VLE as this idea of a virtual learning environment like Blackboard or Moodle or something like this, there's very few primary schools certainly in Scotland would be using a VLE. They maybe use online learning through GLO or Thompson Elf, but they don't have this idea of using a VLE. And the other thing I was saying was here, our services are usually provided by the local authority, or in the case of GLO, a sort of national level. But do I understand right that in England that those decisions are right down at the school level as to which VLE you use and things like that?
Yeah, as usual, it's a really complicated picture. There's certainly less uniformity and quite a wide range and diversity at school level and at local authority level across England. So VLEs, I think, are really pretty common at primary level, although the massive variety in how well they're used, and that's mostly down to the majority of them being fairly clunky and not that easy to use. I mean, I thought Blackboard was poor, but having had a go with some of the other systems that people have been using in primary school, I'm not surprised they're not using them. I know that in Leicestershire, which is the county council, the local authority that I'm working in, I think decisions were left to school clusters. So it would be a family of schools running through the primary schools that would feed into the secondary schools. So whichever was the lead secondary school, if you like, at the top of the tree, tended to pick the VLE and then filter that down throughout the rest of the family of schools, which means that there are several different VLE systems working in Leicestershire.
other places have taken different approaches, and there are VLEs or other systems that were established at a county-wide level and rolled out across the county. Norfolk have had a big presence at the Google Teacher Academy last week, and that was because they've signed up as an education authority to Google Apps and are rolling that out across the whole of their network of schools at all levels, at secondary and primary, as far as I'm aware, which is one of the biggest Google Apps accounts. So it's something like, it's over 130,000 accounts at that level. But I do know that in certainly in Leicestershire, where I'm going to be working, schools have started using Google Apps just at a school level, and you can even use it, you know, even at a class level. You could just set it up for the class, and I think what most people do is they would wrap in any email from a county that needs to be done at an official level, from a county or local authority, that can be pulled and filtered into Gmail. And dealt with in that way if you want to, or you can keep them separate as two separate networks. Does that help?
Yeah, it does. I mean, one of the things we're waiting for at the moment in Scottish education is an announcement for the government to replace our GLO, the sort of national intranet for education, and I believe the rumour would have it that Google are one of the contenders, so it may be that we'll all be in Gmail by this time next year in Scotland. We'll just have to wait and see. I'm kind of interested in VLEs because I haven't had an awful lot to do with them at primary level, but they almost seem to me to be an online equivalent of the sort of education we're moving away from, in certainly in Scotland, with Curriculum for Excellence, where we're looking for learners maybe to be flexible and have more choice and things like that. And a VLE to me seems to very much imitate, or the way I've seen it used, it sort of tests and sort of automatic marking and things like this. I would have thought or hoped that maybe whatever you could do with Google would be a wee bit more flexible than a VLE.
Yeah, definitely, and I'd agree. In the ways that I've seen them used, have been fairly limited, and really not that dissimilar from the way that I've seen the HG ones used, which is as a kind of expensive filing cabinet of information that just happens to be held in a common source, and you know, some of the better uses of it allow children to just go in and actually work and customise the site for themselves, and I think a lot of people felt, particularly at primary level, they liked that idea of working online but were very frightened about doing it publicly and openly.
Mm-hmm.
And so felt it was better to do it in a walled garden. I'm really against that. I think that children need to certainly be protected, but the only way that we expect them to, we've got to lead them by example, and we've got to show them how to work safely online, and got to give them the freedom and the choice to do that, I think. And we need to do that openly and publicly. And you can do that in lots of different levels, and you need to scaffold it, and you need to make sure that they're safe. But I know that people, I'd much rather see people sort of lead by example and show some good uses of online behaviour and model that for children than to have them work in a lockdown filtered environment that is nothing like the real world. I mean, we don't do that with crossing the road. We don't let them only cross the road in special places, in a walled area in the playground. We have to go outside and learn how to do it on the real road. So there's got to be some real learning going on there. And exactly to your comment about the personalised agenda, just doesn't work in a VLE. It could do, but it isn't set up to work easily like that. And certainly, Google's not the only place that you can get that. I mean, you can build yourself
you know, just as nice a support and sharing system, using other things like WordPress or Postgres or something like that, where you can start blogging and sharing things online really easily. I've been using Evernote quite a lot recently and publishing things to the web through Evernote booklets, and the tagging and devices in there work quite well for sharing things quite easily and quite quickly and building up portfolios of work, which is another interesting way to look at things.
Joe, I've got a potentially big question to finish on here. What I'll do is send you some of the text through via Skype, because it relates to a piece of research that's recently been published, and it comes from Finland. Three Finnish academics have just published a paper recently called Towards ICT in Everyday Life in Finnish Schools, subtitle Seeking Conditions for Good Practices. And the reason I just want to drop in these six characteristics of successful integration of ICT into schools, I'm just going to read these six out, and I'll send them through to you on Skype just now so that you can see them as well. And what my question to you is, Joe, is out of these six characteristics, what are you going to, if any of them, I'm sure you'll be interested in more than one, but which of these six areas are you going to focus on in the early stages of your primary career within the school that you're going to, and obviously you're not there yet, but as you're about to enter the primary teaching profession, where do you see your efforts and your expertise at this point being brought to bear on the school and the pupils? And maybe say something about how you might be intending to go about that. And I know some of the areas won't be relevant at this stage, or may not be relevant at this stage in your career. So these three, and I'm sure you've got it on Skype, you've got it in front of you, so for the benefit of listeners, I'll read out these six characteristics. So six characteristics from the Finnish system, based on research around successful integration of ICT. So they are ICT included strategic planning as part of the school culture, teaching and learning methods facilitating participation and leading to empowerment. Third one's flexible curricula or curriculums. High investment in communication, optimum leadership and management, and creating among the teaching staff a strong capacity and commitment to ICT. So just to finish up tonight's show, I'd be interested in where you stand or where you see yourself coming into the profession, at which of these levels?
Wow, okay. That's a great... I need to get that paper.
Yeah, it does.
It's a good question. No, I mean, obviously, there's quite a few in there at the strategic level that, as an NQT, I'm just not going to be able to get into. I'm looking to last all the way to Christmas without some, sinking or getting pneumonia. That's my main aim at the moment. In amongst that, I think the one that stands out certainly as an NQT has got to be that teaching learning methods facilitating participation and leading to empowerment. The few chances that I've had in placement schools to get children involved in some of the ICT that I'd like to use, that participation and empowerment was just really important for me. So one of the first tools that I got children to work with straight away was, we use Primary Wall, but any sticky online note system that allows you to share on a wall with lots of different comments, like Primary Pad or Linolit or any of the other ones, a Wall Wisher, that lets you share. And just that one simpler act of allowing children with even, they only had one laptop between two, but letting them all put their own comments on with their own name on really quickly so that we could share them. The excitement that they got of seeing that everyone else had contributed, that everybody got a chance to speak on the ICT. They continued adding to that at home. So it took the learning outside the classrooms. The parents were seeing what they were talking about. And this was just a simple exercise for feeding back from some thoughts that they'd had on some literacy unit they were doing on imaginary worlds. And it was just their ideas that they'd thought of. And they kept referring back to that throughout the next couple of weeks that we were working together. And we had plenty of technical problems with it, but it really showed to me that you can use ICT so quickly and so effectively to just let every child in your class have a voice, regardless of how keen they are on putting their hand up or joining in or whatever other techniques they want to use for no hands up questioning. And the buzz that they got out of seeing everyone else's comments and values on there was really important to me and made quite a big impression. If I can take that one step further with blogging and writing online, I think that would probably be the next step that I'd like to take with children when I'm teaching. I would love to work with the flexible curriculum and just start rewriting it from whatever the children want to do. But I have a feeling that my NQ2 year is possibly not the time to do it. I need to get working with the staff that I'm on there.
Give that a month, Joe.
Maybe that's a good place to finish.
Joe, I think we're going to have to call it a night there. It's been just really interesting. There's been lots of great stuff, lots of things I think we could keep on talking about for quite a long time, but we probably can't keep you or our listeners much longer. Can I just say a big thank you to you for coming on, from all the food for thought you provided. I guess you may get a ping or two on Twitter. And just to round up, on Wednesday the 18th of April at 4:30 British Standard Time, we've got Gabrielle Estella from Thermopra and members of a study visit team who are doing social pedagogy, Scottish reflections on Danish holistic childcare practices, which sounds like a big one. It'd be interesting to listen to that. And also that same Wednesday, the 18th of April, we'll meet Kenji Lam on open source technologies, which might be a nice contrast or comparison with Google. It's a different kind of free. Anyway, I'd say goodbye from myself and from David, and a big thank you very much to Joe. And hopefully,
thanks, I've really enjoyed it.
We'll hear from folk, and you'll be able to listen in next week. Cheers.
Cheers.